Welcome to your new day.
This is Early Breakfast with Africa Milani.
At 8 minutes past five, this is what you need to know this Friday. The start on the railways, where the troubled passenger rail agency has been ordered by a court to pay hundreds of millions to employees, the order following PRASA's refusal to abide by the terms of an existing wage agreement. PRASA, which has suffered huge operational losses, has asked employees to agree on a payment plan. Matters involving wildlife. Animal welfare organization Four Paws South Africa says it is concerned about the increase in big cat farming and its commercialization in the country. This comes as the Edenville SPCA in Gauteng is searching for a 9-month-old tiger, which is on the loose. There are conflicting reports about the whereabouts of the animal, with a private security company claiming to have captured and relocated the cub. The SPCA, however, says there isn't any proof provided by the company. In the DRC, Pope Francis has urged young people to forge a new future without the ethnic rivalry, corruption and distrust that have fueled many bloody conflicts on the continent. He was addressing more than 65,000 youths at the Martyrs Stadium in the capital, Kinshasa. The Pope spoke of forgiveness and reconciliation, themes that have dominated his visit to the country, where armed conflict has killed and displaced millions of people over the past decades. In Colombia, a judge has caused a stir by admitting that he used the artificial intelligence tool ChatGPT when deciding whether an autistic child's insurance should cover all the costs of his medical treatment. He also used precedent from previous rulings to support his decision. Juan Manuel Padilla, a judge of the Caribbean city of Cartagena, concluded that the entirety child's medical expenses and transport costs should be paid for by the medical aid plan, as his parents could not afford them. And while the judgment itself did not cause much fuss, it is the inclusion of the judge's conversations with the platform in the ruling that has been contentious. Amongst inquiries with the chat box, the legal documents show Padilla asked ChatGPT the precise legal matter at hand: is an autistic minor exonerated from paying fees for their therapies? The response from the tool corresponded with the judge's final decision. And we finish off matters sports. Up to 40 countries, apparently, could boycott the next Olympic Games, making the whole event pointless, according to Poland's sport and tourism minister, Kamil Bortniczuk. His comments came after Poland, Lithuania, Estonia and Latvia jointly rejected an International Olympic Committee plan to allow Russians and Belarusians to compete in 2024. Ukraine has threatened to boycott the Paris Olympics if that occurs, but the IOC on Thursday saying that any boycott would only punish the athletes.
Wake up.
It's your early breakfast
with Africa Milani.
11 minutes past 5 o'clock this Friday morning. Eskom calling a media briefing at quite a short notice, actually. That started at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, finished about an hour and 14 minutes later. As is customary, there were presentations from the various executives and board members of Eskom, and then this was followed by a series of questions and answers from, in the main, the media that were dialed in to the Microsoft Teams meeting organized by Eskom yesterday. Professor Hartmut Winkler is an energy analyst and physicist at the University of Johannesburg. Hartmut, what were some of your main takeaways from the briefing from Eskom yesterday? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yes, well, they're certainly making it sound good when they're saying that on the weekend we're going down to stage three from what we are now. But that unfortunately the situation we're going to be facing throughout this year. So, yes, they are having on the short term a little bit of a better outlook, but of course that can unfortunately change all very quickly. All we need is a couple more breakdowns, which are happening all too often at Eskom, and we might be back to stage five and six again. You never unfortunately know. I think what they also were telling us a lot about is what some of the challenges they were facing, especially concerning the gas plants and what that is all about. And yes, it's true that the gas plants are at the moment running at much more intensity than they would like them to, bearing in mind that gas or generating electricity from gas is the most expensive way to do it. So gas is only really a backup that you only want to touch when everything else is not available. And because Eskom has been in this almost permanent stage of load shedding, and because of the public pressure to keep the lights on, they've been burning gas and using diesel as well at a very high rate. And that's what's got them into this this budget deficit this year, where they essentially run out of money for gas, and they've been trying to make their way around that. So all in all, yes, it's informative in a sense. I also appreciate that Eskom is having these briefings, and I think they are slowly telling us about what the real challenges are that they're dealing with. I think it will also make the public understand better why it's not just possible to come in and fix Eskom in 6 months, and that there's no really quick solutions to the crisis we're having. I think the sooner the public and also the government not only understands that but also works on that basis, I think the better for everybody. I think we need to be realistic about where we are. We're in a very bad situation. There's no real easy solution. There are some solutions. They're expensive. Do we want to go for those or not? And yes, I think this sort of sets a much better space for having a conversation about where we need to go as a country.
In fact, in response to a question around the pronouncements by the ANC following the Lekgotla this past weekend, where they're saying a national state of disaster is going to be declared and they want to see the back of load shedding before the end of the year, a journalist was asking, has this placed Eskom under pressure? They were quite cool and calm about it, saying we have a 2-year plan to get the country out of load shedding. In fact, they would not even be brought into speculating what this national state of disaster might mean for Eskom, saying let's wait for government to conclude the work that it needs to do. Probably wise of them, right? Not to fall for whatever political pressure that they might be under at the moment.
Yes, that's right. I think with this national state of disaster, the reports I've heard from the ANC Lekgotla was that when eventually they made the decision that yes, this is the way to go to, everybody cheered and clapped and so on, but then afterwards they actually had to go back and look at what exactly does it mean to do that, and how in any way is this actually going to assist in the process, and that's where we are. And that's where I think we don't really understand how this is going to help, because yes, one can see where if you've had a major floods or fires or something, and you call for a national state of disaster, that you can see how that will immediately help. That makes free certain funds to do certain things which are available. But Eskom, to fix Eskom is something that you can't just sort of come in with a lot of money now and have it all sorted out in a couple of weeks. It's much more complicated than that. The reason why we are at the moment in this fairly high stage of load shedding, especially for this time of the year, is because 4 of the 6 units at Kusile, which is the biggest, together with Medupi, is the biggest power station in the country, 4 out of those 6 are not working, and 1 out of the 6 Medupi units are not working. And at Kusile, 1 is just not finished yet, and the other 3 had this technical problem, which is really going to lay them down low for something like a year or so. And making funds available may help in some instances, but I'm not really sure how it's going to speed up the process there. I think most of the things that are needed to fix Eskom don't need any kind of a state of disaster. I suppose it just sounds good. It means people are taking things seriously, that becomes a priority. But ultimately, the tools to try and fix Eskom, as much as they are slow tools that are not going to sort things out quickly, are something that can be done without a national state of disaster.
Let's address the issue of coal, because there is generally a sentiment that Gqeda Mantashe, the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy, under which the SOE Eskom might fall under again in the upcoming cabinet reshuffle, mm-hmm. where perhaps the Ministry of Public Enterprises might be done away with. We know he's very much pro-coal. He's quite concerned about communities, particularly in Mpumalanga, who rely heavily on the mining of coal for their existence. I think it was the chief executive of Eskom actually saying, no, Eskom is not anti-coal. Yes, there is a plan to convert a few more of the coal-fired fleet from, I suppose, using fossil fuels to renewable energy. And it might, I think, remove about 4,500 megawatts of power over a period of time. But they still very much appreciate that coal is going to be possibly the basis of any future energy mix in South Africa.
Yes. If you look at right now, how much of our electricity comes from coal? Well, I've looked at the official statistics from 2020, and we're talking of 88% of our electricity actually comes from coal. So, you know, there's a lot of talk of especially solar and wind threatening that. But this is not something which is going to change overnight. If one looks at the official plan, which is out of date now, but it's still what's being used, we're looking at a situation where by 2050, it's only then that the dependence on coal will go below 50%. So this transition away from coal, which is an international trend, it's nothing that's specific about South Africa. It's just South Africa is extremely dependent on coal. Even inside Africa, there's only three countries which are very heavily dependent on coal, all of them in the region here, South Africa, Botswana, and Zimbabwe. So we are a bit of an anomaly in terms of the global picture, plus that there's this very strong sentiment against coal because of its link to climate change. It does look like the world is going to be moving away from coal, and it's not only that the coal sector is going to be affected by what's happening to our power stations, but also just the international demand for coal is going to go down quite a bit. So, but yes, it's nothing that's going to happen immediately. But in Mpumalanga, in the coal sector, people are going to have to start looking at the future. It's not only there; it's also the petrol companies, they are eventually going to be threatened by electric cars. And in other countries, one can already see it. Half the vehicles are now electric cars rather than the petrol cars we're used to. And I think that trend is also going to come to South Africa.
Eventually.
So we're looking at the world changing, but it's not going to happen that fast.
Hartmut, thank you very much as always for your insights. Professor Hartmut Winkler is an energy analyst and physicist at the University of Johannesburg.